Good morning.
Good morning.
Wow. I have done this draft about six times because I thought that I want to enlighten you about something. I have, after all, a binder full of certificates, so I feel I should know something. However, I'm just looking at the time. Oh, I got good time. I was worried I'd only have 20 minutes and have to rush things. I don't. So I mostly have for you today questions, poems, and my own experience. So who are you? What are you? Are you your professions? Are you your beliefs? And what do you want? What do you long for? I love questions because they leave openness, room to explore. It's not about having an answer and putting it into a little box and then putting it on a shelf. Now I know. It's about staying unknowing. I love poems because they point in a direction. They don't actually define things for you, at least not to me. I didn't do very well in English literature. I thought poems were awful until I discovered I didn't have to pick them apart. I could just enjoy them. So my first poem is by Hafez, the Sufi poet. And I do apologize for changing your order of service as soon as I got here. I just had them as my little prompts, what to do next. So it's by Hafez, the Sufi poet from the 1300s. That's called And For No Reason. And for no reason, I start skipping like a child. And for no reason, I turn into a leaf that is carried so high, I kiss the sun's mouth and dissolve. And for no reason, a thousand birds choose my head for a conference table, start passing their cups of wine all around and their wild songbooks. And for every reason in existence, I begin to eternally laugh and love. When I turn into a leaf and start dancing, I run to kiss our beautiful friend, and I dissolve in the truth that I am. I have prompts. Yeah, that's my granddaughter. And she's looking at her mom, who just breastfed her. And I have it by my bed. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not loud enough? I have it by my bed. Ooh, that sounds good. I sound kind of sexy this way. So I have it by my bed because I see love. I see nothing but love, and it reminds me every day that we are magnificent. We are all born magnificent. There's no doubts, there's no unworthiness, there's no guilt, no shame. It's pure infinite potential. Pure love shines. I think the picture says it all, actually. If we all came into this world this way, what's happened? If this is who we are, what's happened to us? Why is there stress in the world? Why is there depression? Why do we look like we're sad when we walk down the street? Why is there war? Why is there hate? What's going on here? That's one of the questions I've asked all my life. What's really going on here? We've mostly come to believe that there is something wrong with our lives. There is something wrong with us and the world, and we are simply not worthy of being loved. As we grew up, we were taught how to behave. What words were the bad words? What words were okay to say? How little girls are supposed to behave? How little boys are supposed to behave? Money and success were good, more was better. My mom taught me always to make my bed. To get good marks and for sure go to university. Always look good. And then marry a lawyer so I wouldn't have to work. I heard all those things very often. My dad taught me how to build a fire in the sauna and in the bush. He taught me to walk silently in the bush, and from him I learned to hate guns. I really tried to be good. I don't know why it's like, when I talk about me, it seems so personal, but I really tried to be good. I wanted the Cinderella story, someone to take me yonder so I could be taken care of, and I wanted my parents to love me. I really did. But I always felt that they didn't quite. I wasn't quite good enough for them to love me. I should have looked prettier. I should have done better at school. I never found that lawyer, but I did find a wonderful man. I actually felt at one point, and I said it to a friend, I'm so sick and tired of living with myself. And I thought, how could I be sick of living with myself? Like, how many of me are there? Actually, I think there's a lot of roommates in my head. Someone saying one thing and the next person says another thing and it goes on and on. So I started to heal myself so that I would be better. And hence all those things that I've done. I've read a ton of books. I had one teacher say to me, can you just forget you read anything? You'll get somewhere if you forget all that. And I've done tons of certificates, and none of them really stuck because I wasn't really, I don't know, they just never stuck. So there was a cycle of continuous improvement, continuously fixing myself. And outwardly, I had everything that I was expected to have, a house in the country, kids, a dog, a husband, a couple cars. And I had everything outwardly, but inside there was this emptiness. I was afraid to even talk to anybody about it because I had everything. Why would I be unhappy? But there was this little achiness inside that thought that said, you're still not worthy. There's something missing here. And I've talked to many people, and I always discover that we really are more alike than different. This is not unusual for me. Most people I meet, if we get a really good conversation going, it's about something missing. Often we hide this fact. And the two top answers when I ask people the question, what do you want? What do you long for? The top two questions are peace and joy. We all want more of the good things in life. We all want to be happy and contented, fulfilled, loved. We may say that we want to write a best-selling book or that we want to be a grandmother, but in the end it comes down to those things would make you happier. And happiness can be gained for a little while. Every desire you have, it's wonderful when you have the desire, but often when you get it, it doesn't last for very long. So back to the picture. So if we started here, how do we get back here? If this is what we say we want infinite potential, this kind of love, no doubts, fears, no guilt, shame, how do we get back here? So it's not about getting back there. We've been looking in the wrong place. We just have to turn around and look back here. We've always been here. We've always been this perfection. We all have infinite creative potential, love, joy, peace. It's like the sun when it shines, it's always there. The sun never stops shining. It's just the clouds that cover the sun and we may not see the sun. But it hasn't gone anywhere. The root cause of human pain and suffering is that we have become identified with all the things we do, our thoughts, our beliefs. We believe that the content of our lives is who we are. We believe that what we think in our heads. There are on average 90,000 thoughts, and I'm only speaking for myself, but they're not the most creative thoughts daily. There's a lot of recycled thoughts, a lot of things that I thought yesterday, I think today, and I think later tomorrow and the next day. All that is required to come back to truth and to let go of what we are not is to let go of what we are not. It's simple, it's unique. Simple and easy? Why did I say unique? I suppose it is unique. Nobody does it. How can it be difficult if that's what you already are? So the next poem, Wild Geese. By Mary Oliver, who is an American poet. She passed away last year. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. So since this talk is called The Bright Path, I suppose I should talk about a little about the bright path. So it's a bright path, not a sad path, rosy path. And I came upon two bright path teachers on a ferry in 2007. They lived in London. And they were strangers to me, but we were looking at the same board of a bed and breakfast posters. And we just started a conversation for no apparent reason. And they left, and my daughter and I, we came back home. And months later, they called me and asked if they could come through Thunder Bay and stay at my bed and breakfast, because they thought I had one. I said, nope. But I remember them. I remember they were so striking. I don't know what exactly it was. So I said, I do have a room in the basement. You are very welcome to come. So she asked me if I would like to be taught their meditation, because they knew I was a yoga teacher and I knew they did meditation. And I thought, oh no. By that time, I had totally given up thinking there was something that I could really get my teeth into. I thought, this is how it's going to be, taking a workshop here and there, dropping it, and going on. And they had given me a CD, and they asked if I had listened to it. I remember listening to it, but I didn't get anything out of it. I didn't feel, couldn't remember. So I said, I'll call you back tomorrow, okay? And I'll let you know if I want to be taught. I'll listen to the CD again. So I had my partner, Don, come and listen to the CD with me, so he would convince me that I don't need to take the course. Because as much as I like courses, he's the anti-course. He thinks we don't need those things. And he listened to it with me, and I'm all ready for him to say, nah, that you don't have to do that. And he said, that sounds really good. And I thought, are you kidding me? So I phoned them back, and I said, sure, I'll take the course. Of course, Don didn't take the course. I taught him, finally. I twisted his arm. So they came through Thunder Bay. Also, I didn't want to be rude. I felt my upbringing was that I couldn't be rude and say, no, if they're staying at my place, I really should let them teach me. So that was another thing. So thank goodness for some of those things that I was taught. And they came through, and the instant they started teaching, I tried to get my friends to come, but it was in the middle of the week and no one wanted to do anything like that. So they taught me by myself, the two teachers, and I instantly realized something. And I cannot put it into words, but it was a feeling of coming home. Oh, yeah, this feels right. This is sort of what I've been looking for. It feels good. So I went on to retreats because I only met these two teachers. I really didn't know anything about this organization. So I went on a 10-day retreat and I met the teacher of the teachers. I liked it. And then I went to a month-long retreat and another week-long retreat. And then I finally decided that these guys are good. I feel so happy being with them. I was joyful and we had a lot of fun. And I think I just wanted a little more fun in my life, more love and joy and peace. And they were showing it just by being themselves. So we have a vibrant community here in Thunder Bay. We have weekly meetings, and there have since I became a teacher, we have three other teachers. The actual practice of the Bright Path is what we call ascension, to rise beyond the limiting beliefs of the mind. And they include meditation techniques. And really, Bright Path is a path of meditation. Meditation brings you inward, at least a true meditation does. There's lots of information on meditation. People always tell me, oh, I tried meditation. And I ask them what they did. There's lots of visualization. There's lots of sitting in an uncomfortable position. That's what people tell me all the time. I'm not going to be able to sit cross-legged. Well, who said you had to? I mean, it's comfort is above all what you need. These techniques are based on praise, gratitude, love, and compassion. If you simply appreciate, anything in this room, you can instantly find something to appreciate. We might be able to instantly find something to criticize, and often I find that that's where we go. We want to fix things and improve things, so we look for what's wrong. So we learn to, in this practice, to look for what's right. See the glass is not just half full, but completely full. And praise naturally leads to gratitude. If I say to Raya, oh, that introduction was out of this world, I didn't know that was all true about me. And I look at her and she might say, thank you. And then we might have connection and we might feel love toward each other. And love expands into compassion naturally. It's not hard. So I found what I was looking for, even though I had no idea was what I was looking for. So what I found was a place beneath all the happenings of the world, beneath all the thoughts, beneath all the shoulds and gotta-dos, that there is a field of silence. There is a place of completeness. Emptiness, freshness. And it's not the words, it's what I'm pointing to. The inner journey is so worth it. I have time to do a little exercise with you. I still have things to talk about, but I have time. So for the moment, play with me. Beware of, what do we call that?
Screen,
thank you. Be aware of the screen behind me. All you have to do is notice it. You don't have to think about it. Just be aware of the screen. Be aware of this light. Be aware of your left elbow. And it doesn't have to tingle or anything. It just, your awareness goes. Be aware of your left hand. Be aware of your right big toe. Be aware of the tip of your nose. Be aware of your right eye. And then be aware of the empty space of this room. Just the empty space of this room. It's not hard. At least I feel that there's a great deal of silence here. Just notice the beingness of this room. The Bright Path teaching is what I call a teaching of the one. There are no two things. The teaching brings you to the direct experience of the perfect silence that lies beyond the mind, and it's the antidote to all our suffering. Any teaching of the one, it's the same thing. It turns you back inward toward yourself. Consciousness is the essence of everything that exists, where everything is one. So what do you need to begin? I think a willingness to think that it's possible, that there's more to life than what we do and what we think. Finding a valid meditation path, one which is one that turns the finger back at your own self. A meditation practice has enormous value. I don't know how it would be done without. Because the mind is always bringing you to the past and the future. There are no present moment thoughts. The thoughts are like clouds covering the sun. And you don't have to sit in a cave with a hair shirt on. I really thought this was true because I had done yoga and tai chi and those things. I thought that I needed to find somebody who sat with a loincloth somewhere in a cave. And I had thought, if I really want to get this, I really want to be free or no truth or no love, that's what I would have to do. I haven't done it. I have sat in a cabin for 10 days all by myself sitting cross-legged. I found it a bit hard. I was so much by myself, I think. I would have loved to have had a guide. And it doesn't matter. A path should be one that you don't have to believe anything. Beliefs keep you in the mind. Path that no matter what your age is, no matter what your gender, the color of your skin, your education, no matter what your beliefs are or aren't, no matter what you have ever done or haven't done, it's irrelevant. Everyone is welcome to go inward. And ideally, you don't believe anything. When you come, innocence of a child, little Alice, which is my granddaughter's name, she doesn't have any of that yet. You don't even have to believe that the practice you're doing works. At least this one works if you don't care. You just do it. Like the great American philosopher Nike says, just do it. You all know who Nike is, yes? I do think guidance is required. I've had guidance, not just my books and my workshops previous to that, but I've had lovely people along the way who have kept me on the path. saying, oh no, you're going the wrong direction, you're thinking too much, you're trying too hard. It's this way. A guide or a coach. It does require commitment. You're really going against what you've been taught. You're going against what we have been taught to believe. So a community is wonderful, and a commitment, 100% commitment to keep going. It's like 100% commitment to me is everything. Because if you're, say your spouse came home one day and he or she said to you, honey, I'm 98% committed to you. How would you feel? You'd wonder what happened, what does that mean? What's going on with the 2%? I'm forgetting my poems. This is another Hafez poem with that moon language. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course you do not do this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still though, think about this. This great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with the full moon in each eye that is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in the world is dying to hear? I can draw. Work harder to be worthy of love, to be worthy of all the good things in life that I've been told I should have. The infinity symbol represents that inner peace, stillness, silence, joy, peace, God, whatever word, just pick one. The word is irrelevant, it's what it's pointing to. And it starts to feel hard, at least it did for me. So we're going toward the infinite. I want to draw a second side. What if?
Yeah.
What if the divine or the infinite was the other way around? What if we were an expression of that? That we are the infinite expressed. All you have to do is play your own. All you have to do is play your own part perfectly, and the world will transform around you. All you have to do is play your own part perfectly, and the world will transform around you. My last poem, The Little Duck. This is by Donald C. Babcock. And he was amongst other things, he was a philosophy professor. He was born in Minneapolis in 1886. I had never heard of him before I found the poem. Now we are ready to look at something pretty special. It is a duck riding the ocean 100 feet beyond the surf. No, it isn't a gull. A gull always has a raucous touch about him. This is some sort of duck, and he cuddles in the swells. He isn't cold, and he is thinking things over. There is a great heaving in the Atlantic, and he is a part of it. He looks a little like a mandarin, or the Lord Buddha meditating under the Bo tree. But he has hardly enough above the eyes to be a philosopher. He has poise, however, which is what philosophers must have. He can rest while the Atlantic heaves because he rests in the Atlantic. Probably he doesn't know how large the ocean is, and neither do you, but he knows it. And what does he do, I ask you? He sits down in it. He reposes in the immediate as if it were infinity, which it is. That is religion, and the duck has it. He has made himself a part of the boundless by easing himself into it just where it touches him. I like the little duck. He doesn't know much, but he has religion. Isn't that cute? So, I like questions. Did you have any questions or comments or anything you would like to ask or...